Welcome to Documentary Diehards, the show where three sports fans break down one 30 for 30 documentary each and every episode. Sam, Ren, Nick here, back again after a little hiatus. We're here to do our Oppenheimer movie review. You guys ready? Oh, that's a different podcast?
Okay, I'm here for the Barbie. I thought this was the Barbie one.
No, that's also a different one. A separate one, too, that you're starting.
We got so many podcasts, guys.
Yeah. Well, it's a podcast network. It's the DD Podcast Networks.
True. Double D Podcast Network.
Yeah. Double D, I like that.
I bet that exists already.
I'm sure it does.
Yes, we are back here after, what did we decide? About 3 months hiatus. It's summer. Historically, our summers have, well, we started in the summer, but that was extenuating circumstances. But last summer, I think we took a little break and, you know, we've had some, especially Sam has had some big life things. So we're back now. And how are we feeling? Sam, what's up?
You know, Ren, when you were saying that intro, I just had a big old smile on my face because I missed this. Things are good, though. Now a dad, 2.5 month old, and that's going really well. And
you are?
Yeah, I didn't tell you.
No, this is more breaking news.
Yeah. So, yep, I have a daughter. And I don't want to say her name in case there's any, you know, scammers out there or anything listening. But
that's her choice. When she decides to come on the podcast, that'll be her move.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But yeah, things are good. How about you, Rudy?
Yeah, glad to be back with you guys. It's been a crazy summer. I feel like it's already gone. So just excited to get back to the start of watching some documentaries and reviewing them with you guys.
Same. Yeah. We are going to review a podcast documentary about USC football. I feel like we're getting down to, you know, documentaries that we, the subjects of them that we watched, you know, that we experienced. Like, I vividly remember, you know, that Texas USC game. And a lot of these are more historical for us that we've been watching. But this one, I feel like we all kind of have experienced what we watched Reggie Bush and all that kind of thing. So should we get into just a quick summary of this? It's called Trojan War, directed by Aaron Thomas. It aired first on October 13th, 2015. And it covers essentially the Pete Carroll era of USC football. So I'm trying to remember, what were the years? It was like early 2000s, right? Early to mid 2000s.
Yep.
And it focused most on those 3 years when USC won, then they won the next year, then they lost to Texas the next year. And then, you know, the characters they focus on, we all know, Pete Carroll, Matt Leinart, and Reggie Bush. What's his name?
Lendale White,
who's the other running back. And then, once we finished that last season where they lost to Texas on the Vince Young touchdown, it covers a little bit of the fallout after, you know, the Reggie Bush Heisman getting taken away, whatever it was, like all the money he got and his, you know, the boosters and all the stuff we all know about, as well as all the other USC infractions and their national championships getting taken away. And so, that's pretty much it. I think anyone listening kind of knows the whole USC story. So let's just get into it. Sam, what'd you think about it?
My first thoughts were that it reminded me a lot of the U and even like a couple of the other docs that we've seen. Was there one on Nebraska or no, Oklahoma? I think the Boz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Nebraska was in there with the U because of the same time and maybe the Boz too.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And, you know, it just kind of follows a similar story of like the ebbs and flows of a college football program. And I think it's like a very familiar storyline of, you know, especially with Miami, really good for a while. And then you go through some downtimes, whether because of coaching or other factors. And then all of a sudden you get the right coach in place who starts recruiting like crazy and boom, boom, boom. All of a sudden you have like a dominant team. And that was, it was really fun to watch just because, like you said, we actually got to, this was like at the beginning of our sports fandom, you know, even if you had asked me a year or two ago to list the five greatest games I've ever watched, maybe like the three greatest games I've ever watched, I would say Texas and USC is probably one, two. I don't know. I would really have to sit down and think about it, but we were in middle school at the time, and I just remember being so excited to watch it and going home and watching it, and just it lived up to all the expectations. And I remember rooting for USC at the time.
I was going to ask.
Which I don't know. I think I saw a lot of my friends liked Texas, I think, but I loved Reggie Bush, like so electric. And I guess one other takeaway was I forgot how big of a deal Lendale White was.
Yeah.
You know, I remember he played for the Titans for a little bit and that he played like somewhat of a role, but I forget like how good of a 1-2 punch him and Reggie Bush were. And it kind of just made me think like what other duos in football history have been that dominant, you know?
I was like your friends and I was Texas all the way. I love Vince Young.
I hated USC.
Okay, because I was going to guess that Nick was going to agree with me on that too. I hated USC. To me, they were like the Lakers. I hated like the Yankees. Yep. I was like, I remember when I was little, I was like, how long can Matt Leinart be in college? Because I thought he had been, I don't know how many years. It was probably only 5 years, but.
No, I don't even think. It might have been three.
What? I don't know, but. I was vehemently, it was like the Cowboys for me when, you know, it was like just those big teams that you rooted against. But yeah, I vividly remember in my family room watching Vince Young run to the right corner of the end zone. And I was like, it was the best thing ever. I don't know why that, but that's like an early sports watching memory for me. Yeah. Nick, what were your takeaways? What is you were a Longhorns guy, at least in that rivalry, probably
sounds in like. That rivalry. Yeah. I didn't like USC. I think it was just, yeah, like the Yankees, the Lakers type of a thought where like they were always winning. Yeah. Reggie Bush. Like I was happy when I heard, like as a kid, I was happy when I heard he was taking all this money or like his, that he was having these violations. Now I think, you know, differently, but yeah, I like Texas. I like Vince Young. You know, I used to play NCAA football and then I would choose the Texas team and, you know, play with them. But I was excited for this this documentary because I felt like I had the same like feel about it that I did with the U, like when we watched the U earlier. But I feel like now we're more seasoned vets in this whole documentary game. And so so we know that wasn't necessarily like our favorite, you know, ever, like it was a good one, but I felt like this had the nostalgia aspect of like when we watched the U first time around, I was nostalgic because I remember watching the 30 for 30, but like this one, I was nostalgic because I actually remembered the event. And so, yeah, I was like pumped and just loved like, you know, getting in there and like seeing the atmosphere of the game and how they started that off with the documentary. It just, yeah, I got my juices flowing.
It also reminded me of the U a lot too. And I feel like the reason a lot of people hype up the U is because they were of that generation that we are in for this, right? It just, you know, it's like, if that's this same era to us, if that makes any sense, like, because they remembered watching all the U be great in their time. And so, yeah, this reminded me of Pony Express too, you know, the SMU team that got the death penalty or whatever they called it, just with the end there when they were like laying down and stripping wins and stuff like that.
I forgot about that one. You're right.
Yeah. I liked and didn't like, you know, a lot of parts of this. But the parts where they were just kind of laying out the years prior to the final year, you know, the year where they played Texas, was probably my favorite part because I didn't remember that in as much detail at all. Especially like when how Pete Carroll got there, his hiring and stuff like that. I thought was really interesting. I hadn't really thought about it much. And I guess I hadn't really remembered how long he was there, or how short or whatever it was, and his, you know, and NFL coaching before that.
And the fact that he hadn't coached in college for 17 years when he got hired was pretty mind blowing to me.
Yeah. And it said he was hired when he was like 50. And I mean, he's like what, the oldest coach in the NFL right now? He's pretty old now, still with Seattle. Like, what is he? He's probably got to be like
75, probably close.
probably older than 75. Well, I don't know, but yeah, late 70s, I would guess. But yeah, so there was a lot of good info. At least that was kind of my biggest takeaway, besides the nostalgia aspects of it. I really like the nuts and bolts of stuff that like I watched but didn't remember as well in college football when we were young.
Pete Carroll is 71 years old.
Dang, I don't know why I like watched a couple like last year and I thought I remembered the broadcast saying he was like even older. But I mean, that's pretty old for a football coach, I
I don't know how
suppose.
he keeps chewing with like chewing on gum so much. Like his jaw's just got to be wrecked after like 71 years of doing that. I
He's
mean,
like Terry Francona for the
oh
NFL
my
with his
God.
chewing gum.
No kidding. Or his jaw is just like so strong.
Iron, yeah. I mean, if he's like, that 71-year-old that's still running marathons, but it's just like his jaw, right? Like,
His jaws for
if there was a
marathons.
world record for, like how strong your jaw is or like your endurance, he would be it.
I mean, he also does run up and down the sideline too, like
Yeah.
he's.
For 71, he has so much energy and enthusiasm. It's impressive.
Well, since we're talking about it, what are our opinions of him in that era? Do we think it was too, there was too much going on? I mean, it's kind of hard not to think that a little bit after seeing like everything that happened. Do we think he was right? I mean, the whole kind of hit against him, right, is that he was letting them do whatever they wanted and letting anyone have access to his players at all times, and that's just irresponsible. Do we agree?
It's so tough. Like, I would say yes, I guess, but because it's different than like anywhere else, right? Like they talk about like it's LA, it's Hollywood, it's like literally like the top famous people, like you're giving them the keys to the kingdom and letting like their influence happen on these 18, 19, 20-year-old kids, and to think that there's nothing bad that could happen out of that, like I don't think he's that stupid. I think he was just, letting it happen to attract more talent to be able to bolster that, that football team.
Yeah,
I
he was
feel like he's,
willing to take the cons with the pros, and
yeah,
take the risks.
yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
I
it
mean,
was worth it.
I was just gonna say, I feel like you see that a lot in coaches nowadays, that make it more, available for at least alumni. To be able to come in and exert their influence on the team,
Yeah, but
basically.
there's also a difference between like all these
Alumni and
talent agents and stuff and
yeah.
stuff than alumni. But and I also do think there's a difference between having Snoop and P. Diddy there and having like these marketing agencies there. Like you can have the
Yeah.
big celebrities there that aren't gonna do like something shady,
Yeah.
probably. And you can also not have CAA and their reps there. Like it's different. I don't know.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I think that might have been his big mistake, is I think it was pretty brilliant to allow the celebrities on the field, because I mean, what 17, 18-year-old isn't going to go there on a visit and go like, oh my God, Snoop Dogg wants me to play for USC? Like, that's pretty cool. Or Will Ferrell's on the sideline telling jokes. Like, that's so cool. Even to us as almost 30-year-olds or 30-year-old, it's like, that's awesome. And it clearly worked, because he started recruiting like crazy and getting these awesome classes in and things like that. But yeah, I don't necessarily think you need like the sports agencies and stuff to be there. Yeah.
Now, also, like this was back when this was probably happening. Well, I guess it's probably still happening, right? But I don't know. It was probably happening to a lot of programs too, and the best athletes in some of the best athletes in college football just happened to be there. I don't know. Like Reggie Bush probably would have gotten these offers whether Pete Carroll was his coach or not. Like so that's the thing is. I don't know. The Heisman Trophy winner is going to get these offers wherever he's playing. So is it Pete Carroll's fault? Not that part, I don't think.
And it just so happens that he's the Reggie Bush might be one of the highest profile college players of our lifetime. And so like if anyone's going to get caught, it's going to be him, because people are watching him so closely and his family so closely because he is so high profile. Like, who's been higher profile in our lifetime in college football? Tim Tebow, maybe. Johnny Manziel, Cam Newton for a year. Like,
yeah, but you, like you're saying, for 3 years, like he was a Heisman Trophy candidate for 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
maybe nobody, maybe Tim Tebow. Yeah,
yeah,
right. So it makes sense why you would get caught, but
this was interesting how this was pre, like, all the forgiveness or whatever, like, because USC was banned from acknowledging that he existed, which is such a weird punishment, like no pictures of him or whatever, and then when was it that he everything was all made good again? Like, that was only 2 years ago, 3 years ago, right?
I was gonna say, I think it was post COVID, right?
Oh yeah,
I think it was pretty recent. Yeah.
So this documentary interviewed Matt Leinart and Pete Carroll and Lendo White, no Reggie Bush, which I'm not surprised, especially when this was made in 14 or 15. What did we think of? Well, I'll give my thoughts. I thought the script, there was a lot of voiceover script. I didn't think it was very additive. I thought it was corny at times. Like, he was like, hey, this happened. Okay, let's rewind. Now let's really rewind. Like, it was just like pretty stale, I thought. And we didn't need it at all. There were so many interviews and stuff. So I thought that was just kind of, it detracted from the production of it. The Larry Truman producer vignettes, you know, this was like a Hollywood theme. The text on the screen was written out like a screenplay, and they had these little vignette, like, interviews with some producer who produced The Graduate. Like, we were supposed to know who that was. It was like a director. It was just some Hollywood producer that they found. And they were like, hey, do you want to be in a 30 for 30? And so they had this little guy, and they plucked his, like, supposedly wise sayings. It was weird. What did you think?
Yeah, I completely agree with you on both of those accounts. I thought that it could have done a better job of going back in time without just being kind of corny with it. As far as, like, because they would do like the screeching tires, like, hold up, let's go back. Yeah, and then I didn't get anything from that old guy that was talking. I understand, like, what they're, or I don't understand what they're trying to do. I understand they're trying to do something, but I just wasn't following it.
Yeah, it wasn't done as deftly as they thought, or they wanted to do it, at least.
You know, like this whole, like, oh, Hollywood movie inside, like, stuff.
Yeah, one of those ideas that sounded clever when they came up with it, but, like, wasn't necessarily executed in the best way.
Yeah, clunky. Oh, you know what I did like is the Lance Armstrong cameo. He was interviewed too. And he was apparently, he's from Texas, and so he was a big Longhorns fan. They interviewed a whole bunch of USC fans, so it worked. And they never really mentioned, you know, his, like, the you know, his doping and all that stuff. But in the end, it all tied together with, and I was thinking this as it went on, I was like, oh, there's a parallel here, because Reggie Bush is about to get stripped of his trophy.
Yes, and did you hear?
Yeah, same for Lance. And then in the end, Lance, they asked him about it, and Lance was like, yeah, I hope he does get it back. And he, like, acknowledged the kind of parallel. And I thought that was woven in super nicely. Really, really well done, I thought.
I agree. When they're like, does Reggie Bush still hold the Heisman Trophy in your eyes? And he's like, absolutely, he's a Heisman Trophy winner.
Yeah, it's like, no kidding.
Of course you're going to say that. Like, no, cheaters don't win.
Yeah, he was like, I hope people in the future will come to understand, you know, like, why they did it or whatever.
Mm. Yeah. Also, can I say one more thing about Lance Armstrong? When they're talking about comparing USC versus Texas, and they were talking about, like, all these mega stars for USC and everything, and then for Texas, it was literally like, it's a bunch of Longhorns and this guy who rides his bike. That's what Lance Armstrong said. It's like, there's a lot more to Texas, and I'm sure not everyone was just thinking, yeah, that's where Lance Armstrong's from.
I didn't even know he was from Texas until now.
I know, but then, did you pick up on that quote where he's like, yeah, basically everyone just knows it for, like, the Longhorns and a guy who bikes. It's like, no, I don't.
Because nobody likes Texas, or, you know, nobody pays attention to Texas besides that. It's like, no, they're in the, like, you know, this is nowadays, but they're in the top 25 every year, even though they shouldn't be, because they're like basically the Dallas Cowboys of the, you know, of college football, where it's just America's team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what an ego that he thinks he's like the most famous person from Texas.
I know. Like,
there's a lot of people from Texas.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I thought that was so funny.
This was clear. I think they said it in the beginning, you know, how 30 for 30s have the director say a little something right as the movie starts. I think they said that he was a USC fan, which is fine. They have most of these documentaries, not most, but a lot of them are like based on the guy who lived through it or whatever. But this was like super slanted. Every documentary has a slant, but I felt like this one was really like, in the end there was something I wrote down, the script, the voiceover script said, you know, if they could do it all again, they would say they had no regrets. And I was like, okay, thanks, voiceover. Like to me, that's what an interview should say. And I was like, okay, why are you saying this? That annoyed me. So it was just kind of assuming that we all were USC fans. Like, I'm willing to appreciate this documentary, but don't assume that I'm a USC fan too. Like, we can't all be, so.
Right. And like, let us form our own opinion about the
exactly
subject.
I forgot about, but that it flooded back to me, the stupid lateral that Reggie Bush had in that championship game.
I was going to say the same exact thing. I forgot all about it, but yeah. as soon as he was running on that play, I remembered it.
Oh.
You know, like, it was one of those things that I was happening. I was like, okay, something big happens here. Oh, it's the lateral play, but I hadn't thought about it. And
that, above any other thing, gave me home to disdain for Bush when I was watching. Like, anything else, I was fine with him. I wasn't a big USC fan, like I said, but that, I was like, everyone agrees it was super dumb. Just after a long run to lateral for no reason and fumble. Yeah,
I will say though, his high school lateral, the highlight that they showed was sweet,
and clearly that's why he did it, because it worked in the past and it was sick, you know.
Right.
Yeah,
and do you guys remember the Randy Moss one?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Of course. Oh,
yeah. I mean, you watch that. How you got to try it yourself? I wonder if this was before or after Randy's.
Oh, good question. Might have been around a couple, like, in the same general years.
You might have saw Randy's like a couple weeks before and is like, I got to give this.
Let me try that. Let me try that when it really matters and can really hurt us.
But I was kind of surprised at how distraught he was on the sideline because of it. Like, I understand it's a huge play, but wasn't it like in the second quarter?
I don't know.
I'm almost positive it was like in the first half of the game, because
they
showed the halftime score. And I'm like, the way he was acting, you would think it was like fourth quarter. Yeah. They were down by three and it was like their only chance to win. Mm-hmm. He was like on the sideline, like crying about it basically. And so I was just like, I feel like in that moment, Reggie Bush, someone as great as Reggie Bush, just needs to be like, all right, I just got to go back out there and make some future plays. And
one of his teammates said that, like, it might have taken him out of the game mentally or something. Yeah,
because I think at that point it was like either 7-0 or 7-3 or something like that, and they would have went up two touchdowns, and that would have been, you know, obviously huge.
Right, huge, but like, it doesn't mean the game's over. You know, it's second quarter. Like, the way he was acting, he was on the sideline like towel over his head, as if he just cost them the whole entire game. They were still leading. It was still early.
You wonder, if the coaches, you know, said something to him, because it seemed like they didn't use him as much. It's kind of what the documentary kind of made it seem like.
Okay, well, remember, so like, as they're recapping at the end, Pete Carroll's career, and that, you know, he went to Seattle, and then in a little text on the screen, they said, well, at first it was like, yeah, he won, 3 years after he went to the Seahawks, he won a Super Bowl. And then an attempt to repeat ended with another play that didn't go his way. You know, when Seattle ran it, or I passed it and threw the pick to the Patriots in the, yeah, at the goal line in the Super Bowl. And it was just this little subtle, like,
oh, that was a subtle jab for sure.
That was really well done. I like that too. Because like in that championship game, the crucial play was that they went for it on fourth to give Texas, and they ended up giving Texas the ball back after they got stopped on fourth down by running it. And with Reggie Bush on the sideline, just like Marshawn Lynch didn't get the ball in the Super Bowl. So those are the parallels there. They were good at drawing parallels, I thought. That was my favorite thing about this production.
Research. Oh, did you just do it too, Rudy?
Yeah, I think so.
2.5 years about is the difference. Randy Moss's lateral was in 2003 in October, and then the game was in January of 2006. So could have been in his head trying to be like Randy.
Yeah.
Everyone's trying to be like Randy.
Did Vince, I guess Vince Young never won a Heisman. I don't know why I had it in my head that he did.
Yeah. Never won.
He kept losing the Heisman in this to all the USC guys, but I don't know why I thought he did. Maybe he was retroactively given the one that Reggie Bush lost. Just kidding.
I guess I just am thinking, like, historically in your fandom of college football, who is Reggie Bush the most electric player that you guys have ever watched? Or who is in that short list for you?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's probably Reggie Bush. I mean, I don't have a long history of college football watching, like, just because.
Yeah, I think, like, Tim Tebow, Johnny Manziel, but they're both quarterbacks.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I was all in on Tim Tebow as well. But I feel like Manziel, as far as, like, exciting, he was more.
Yeah.
Any given play.
Cam Newton's Heisman year was ridiculously good.
Yeah.
I don't think I watch as many of those games somehow.
Okay. Yeah, but I mean, I'm not a huge college football guy either, but there's definitely those players that, you know, just stand out. And Reggie Bush and Vince Young were both those guys.
Yeah, without a doubt.
I mean, Baker Mayfield was really fun too. I wouldn't say he's at the same level as Reggie Bush, but.
Yeah. Cam Newton's bigger than everybody else. And.
Mm-hmm. And then, not only just talking about individuals, but like as a team, I had forgotten that they had won, what, 35 straight games, and that this Texas team comes in and beats a team that had won 35 straight. Mm-hmm. Like, I knew the significance of how amazing of a game it was and Vince Young's run at the end and things like that, but I had forgotten that it was even a bigger thing because it was kind of like David beating Goliath in a way.
Yeah, I guess I didn't remember the undefeated streak either. I did remember feeling like it was David and Goliath, and I was always rooting for the underdog back then. And like I mentioned before, that's why I didn't really like USC. And so that like made it even sweeter to watch that play. But yeah, I didn't remember the streak was so long. And I guess if you had mentioned it before I watched this, I wouldn't have said that they were a college football dynasty. Like if you were to choose among those, you know, like the U back in the day, whatever, I probably wouldn't have. They wouldn't have necessarily popped into my head.
Agreed. And finally, last thing I have, what do you, you know, you already asked our opinion on like Pete Carroll, but what are your thoughts on him leaving for the NFL? And was that like the right move? And was it kind of a cowardly move to get out right before the sanctions and all of that?
I don't have anything wrong with him leaving, but because of all of the timing of it, yeah, it looks bad. And like it's like he, especially with the fallout, like it, none of the stuff happened in the past. The punishments didn't happen in the past. They're only going to happen in the future when he wasn't there, you know. It's like, and he did it all to them, arguably. Like he let it happen at least. So yeah, it sucks, but what's he supposed to do? Just stay there when he has an option to go coach in the NFL? It's like you can't expect anyone to do that. Like, hey, do you want to be punished or not? Well,
right.
But I remember kind of really being disgusted at Pete Carroll then just because of the optics of it.
Yeah, I mean, optics is, it's completely Bush League that he orchestrated this whole thing and then he doesn't get, you know, held accountable for it at all. And he's able to just get out of jail free card. Meanwhile, all the student athletes are the ones that are punished, or the university and the future student athletes that, you know, never had a, you know, they were in what, ninth grade at the time, right? You know, whatever it might be. So yeah, that's, you know, the tough thing about college sports and the, I don't know, I guess the problem they can't solve, you know, these coaches orchestrating things like that. And then how do we punish the coaches when they can just leave to go to another institution? I mean, you look at John Calipari and how many programs he screwed over, and then he just went to the next one and was able to get off scotch free. And, you know, coaches like that. And yeah, how can you, you know, fairly punish the person? And then especially in Pete Carroll's situation, when they leave the league to go to the NFL, I mean, yeah, you don't really have that jurisdiction to be able to enforce anything.
Yeah, if you go from college to college, it'd probably be a lot easier. But it's like he's literally like committing a crime in a country and then just going to a different country where he can't be extradited, you know, whatever. So it's, yeah, I don't know what the solution is.
Should we do a rating?
Let's do it.
I'm going last because I think mine's going to surprise you guys.
Oh, man. All right. I can go first. I'll go really quick. I'm going to go 7.7 botched pitches. I liked it. I really loved reliving the glory days. I thought that the interviews were really great, and I enjoyed, like, they were just visually beautiful, I thought. We didn't really mention that, but like the lighting on all of the interviews, I thought was awesome. And like the backgrounds and stuff, you could tell it was really, really well done and like high quality. Mm-hmm. So that was impressive. And I just thought it told the story really well. So I'm going to go 7.7. It wasn't my favorite, but yeah, I enjoyed it. What do you think, Rudy?
Yeah, I'm going to go with 8.15 free homes because Reggie Bush's parents got to stay in a free home in San Diego, I believe it was. And I can only hope and dream that someday my daughter is able to provide a free home for my wife and I in San Diego. That'd be really nice. So,
as is her duty.
Better get her in the gym, start hitting those jumpers.
That 19th percentile heights isn't going to help. So got to figure out some strategies here. Start stretching the hamstrings and we'll go.
Brad Marinovich style, baby. Mm-hmm. Connections. Also, can we just, before one thing we haven't mentioned, can we talk about the brownie thing really quick? Sure. So, like, what are your guys' thoughts on that? Have you heard any updates on brownie having cardiac arrest during practice?
Just that it happened and
he's not in the ICU anymore is all I heard, and just that they put out their statements. Incredibly scary situation. I feel like there's more stories of it happening lately. I don't know, it's just more publicized or what's going on, but gosh, I can't imagine being at practice. They just had they just had another player on the same team, on the USC team, that had, you know, a similar thing happen.
Wow.
So I guess you could, you know, you can make the statement like, oh, they were trained and had experience with it. You know, not that you want experience with that sort of a thing, but thank God there's probably a defibrillator there, and that's why they need to be there in all, you know, athletic venues, and, you know, important to have that. But gosh, you just hope that he's, you know, recovers well, and then he's able to come back like Keontae Johnson, who was on Kansas State. He used to play for Florida and, you know, was pretty successful this last year, but he had to go find a college that was able to medically clear him. So, I mean, mm-hmm. That's way down the road and not the most important thing for him right now. We just hope that there's, you know, good health and he's able to recover and, you know, damages are minimal, but.
Well, yeah, and, like, hopefully there's no underlying condition that makes it basketball. He can never play basketball again. Like, we don't know anything, any details, but, like, that is a possibility for anyone.
Without a doubt.
There's any person. Like, they could have an underlying condition, so we don't know. Yeah, that was wild to wake up to that news.
Yeah, super shocking.
Yeah, that was another example of one of those ESPN alerts that I'm like, wow, I never in a million years would have guessed that one.
Yeah, sometimes I'll open up the ESPN app and be like, I bet I can guess what the top like three headlines on that headline section are. That you couldn't have done that one. So
yeah.
No.
Okay, back to the rating. My turn. I'm gonna give this 4.9 Eskimos. Because Matt Leiner, he was like talking about Pete Carroll, and he was like, he could sell ice to an Eskimo, and he meant to say Eskimo, and he sounded like a really dumb. And they put it in. Matt Leiner, when he was interviewed, it wasn't like when he was in college either. It was when he was interviewed for this. He's like, you sell ice to an Eskimo. Like, is that what he thinks? How you pronounce Eskimo?
Yeah, I heard it too, Ren, and I was wondering if anyone else picked up on it. I forgot to mention it.
It sounds familiar, but I don't even know if I'm like, yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm just orchestrating a thought in my brain now, but like that doesn't seem quite right.
Yeah. So funny. So yeah, under five, because technically, I think I weigh the technical over the kind of good feelings I got from this. I definitely did get some good, you know, nostalgia, and I liked watching a lot of the games, and they did a good job with that, and the interviews, like you said, were well done. But yeah, like just overall, like the structure of it was not as good as most of the ones we've watched, I thought. And it was such a good content, you know, story, like the subject matter was so good that it was hard for it not to be somewhat fun, I thought. So I wasn't like super impressed with the way they handled it. But I mean, I enjoyed it. It was a fun watch. It was an hour and 19 minutes. So I did the thought exercise where I was like, would I recommend it to someone who's just trying to watch a good one? Probably not. Unless they're a big USC person. So
I will say the producer thing that we talked about being a huge miss was a major part of this, and probably should have factored into my rating more than it did. Like, you know, it showed up 10 times at least in the middle of this documentary, and for it not really to make a ton of sense to any of the three of us is kind of like a Rudy, maybe we should have lowered it like a point looking at it now, but
that is such a swing and a miss. Like,
but the nostalgia.
Yeah, and like but Ren sticks his hand up to nostalgia. He's like,
yeah,
sure. Not my unbiased opinion. All right.
I think we all take pride in not changing our rating after we've listened to the other people talk. And like, this was one where I kind of wanted to, even after before your ratings, like I was like, well, I did like it, but I feel like that's we stand hard on just rating it after we watch it and then, you know, seeing what happens.
For sure. So that was a 6.92, which puts it 29th out of 69 that we watch now. So it's in the top half, but closer to the middle.
Okay. All right. Now let's move on to Mount Rushmore. We are doing Mount Rushmore of universally liked things. I think that's how we should phrase it, right, Sam? Is that what, does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that's good. Universally liked or loved things.
Yeah, this can be anything, right? This can be person, place, thing. You know, it can be however you want to interpret it, I guess.
It is Ren, me, Rudy.
So I will go first, and I'm going to go high fives.
Hmm.
Kind of very random, but like, who doesn't like a high five? Even if someone isn't a high fiver, like in like they don't do it often, it's like they'll smile when you give them a high five. So I'm going abstract with the start here. Okay. Next.
I like it.
Not as much commitment needed, so
I'm gonna go with a cold beverage on a hot day, because who doesn't love, even if it doesn't even have to be like an alcoholic beverage or anything, it could just be water on like a really hot day like we're having right now. All you want is just a nice cold drink after you've been outside for a while. Everyone loves
that. It's an alcoholic beverage, but if not.
Exactly.
Love it.
I got two. I'm going to go free food.
Oh.
Anytime you get free food.
That's really good.
That is really good.
I just, yeah, it hits differently. So
that's tastes so much better.
And then second one, I'm going to go with babies, or just the sight of, even if it's not like having a baby, it's like the sight of a baby. I feel like, you know, especially being in my vantage point of dad, like going through a store, you're like, do, 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 do. And then everyone's like staring at your kid and like smiling. And at first you're like, why are you smiling at me? And then you quickly learn there's no reason they're smiling.
They don't even see you. Yeah.
Right.
Good one. Nice.
Okay. I'm going to kind of stick with that theme. I'm going to go kids in costumes.
Nice.
Like, just watching kids walk around on Halloween and their costumes are coming to your door and saying trick or treat is so funny and awesome.
I'm going to say dogs. I think it's getting even more popular. I feel like dogs are even more like popular nowadays, but everybody stops and pets a dog. Like I'm obsessed. I'll do it without even looking at the person, and I'll just, you know, whatever. People are like, you're a dog person or you're a cat person, but like even cat people don't really dislike dogs, but dog people, if you want to be like, take a side, like people dislike cats, but I don't think people actually like dislike dogs. It's hard to, so that, I think that's why they deserve to be on the list. And secondly, I'm gonna say money. You give someone money, like everyone likes money.
Money. If you want to be real about it, yeah, everyone wants money. So there you go.
Hey, that I'm not going to disagree.
True. Very practical.
I was trying to get really down to the core of this prompt, Sam.
I'm going to go. I'm not going to think about money here. I'm going to think about what the true happiness means to me, man. I'm going to go a good hug.
Aww.
Who doesn't just, you know? There's some people in the world who are just like awesome huggers. And every once in a while you run into one of those people and you're just like, that was a good freaking hug. And every once in a while you run into people who are terrible huggers and you're like, what the, you held me for too long, or like, yeah. Like tapped my back too aggressively, or
noodle armed it,
or you like one armed it. And then like, there's some people who just like embrace you and you're just like, I just want to like be here forever. Just right here.
Love it.
So then the question is, are hugs that are subpar still universally loved or not?
Or is this a good hug? A bear hug?
That's a good hug. Yeah. I had to clarify.
All right. Let's see. I'm going to go with, so I got two, I think. So in Minnesota, it's kind of Minnesota specific, but I feel like up north, like whenever you say up north, you know, whether it's like a cabin or a vacation or just like, you know, getting away, I feel like up north is just kind of lingo for something that's universally loved.
True Minnesotan.
And then I'll go off the beaten path here. Maybe it's just TMI, but I think like a good poop definitely hits the list.
That's not what I thought you were going to say. Amazing. That's the worst on this list. What are you talking about? The things are
come on, that's not a good stay starter for you.
And you're telling me that after a good poop, you're not walking around a little bit happier?
Run.
Sure, but it does. It's not list worthy. Like,
it's like universal. You put this alongside
with babies.
Wow, I didn't know this was only your list, Ren.
Hey, my other picks are so strong. I can pull up this one.
Yeah, you can just drop a deuce on the end of your list.
Quite literally.
All right, I'm going to say waking up and realizing you have more time to sleep.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
That's really good. Nothing better. Such a good feeling. Ooh, that's making me think of other ideas now.
You only like got one cook left.
But no, not like that, Rudy. I'm going to stick with what was on my list, which is pizza. Like, I was thinking about this, and I had also an ice cream as an honorable mention, but I was just trying to think of foods that, like, every culture, like, if they try it, they like. Like, everybody I know, like, at least kind of likes pizza. Like, no one that's... You can usually find someone that doesn't like any given food, but I don't think I've found anyone that doesn't like pizza. Even if it's not, like, their favorite food, they still like it, so...
Or some
you can personalize it.
Yeah.
All
right, Mount Rushmore of universally liked things. Ren went with high fives, dogs, money, and pizza. I went with a cold drink on a hot day, kids in costumes, a good hug, and more time to sleep. Rudy went with free food, babies, up north, and finish it off with a good poop.
Oh, that's just wild. That's so wild. I can't believe you went there. Oh my goodness.
Had to.
You just had to go. I don't think we have a doc wish list. I don't, this is our return from a hiatus. And so I don't, unless anyone has one off the top, we can.
No,
end
I
it
think
here.
The wish list was hit with quarterback and featuring Kirk Cousins. Was that one of ours?
Quarterback's pretty awesome. I'm a big fan.
I haven't watched it yet.
I've watched two episodes, but
I think we've all, like, I think one of us pitched Patrick Mahomes across the past couple of years. I know someone did.
Yeah.
I may have even pitched Marcus Mariota. It sounds like something I would pitch. And then someone might have done Kirk too. Now that you mention it, maybe not, but it would be.
So one is RG3 and Kirk Cousins, I'm seeing.
That does sound like one. It wasn't me, but yeah.
It was Sam.
Yeah. Because the draft class, or not the draft class, but the, you know, the Washington quarterback room, and yeah.
Oh, here we go. I got one. Dan Schneider. Let's talk, like, Dan, a documentary on how terrible of an owner Dan Schneider was.
And person.
And person.
Yeah. Yeah.
They literally, crazy. I was just reading some stuff on Twitter about him. In like 2008, Washington was the number one. They had the most fans per game and stuff, number one in attendance. In 2023, they're 32nd. In like 24 years he owned the team, they had two first team all pros, and one of them was a special teamer this last year. Just absolutely brutal. But I have a baby crying, so I need to go.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and this is why we've taken a while. Thanks,
you go be a dad.
Sam, this was fun.
Yeah, super fun, guys. Can't wait for the next one.
Later.